You know, the knee surgeons, they know lots and lots about cartilage. So we should exchange knowledge.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Rhinoplasty Podcast with me, Dr. Cameron McIntosh. I have got a special guest today because feeling a wee bit of emotion that today is our last episode of season three. And it's coming to you live from Verona, where I'm having these face-to-face interviews. And the first person I ever interviewed for the podcast 3 years ago, a great friend and mentor, is Miguel Ferreira. Miguel, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks, Cam, for having me here. So, yeah, that's all. It's a big pleasure. And I remembered 3 years ago that we talked a little bit on your first episode. It was an honor for me, and well, let's go.
That's awesome. Miguel, so wow, I mean, we've been going for a long time. I mean, but way before that, you were still in South Africa. We operated together. And then the big thing that really kind of took off over the last time since we've spoken is the evidence-based research rhinoplasty group and the Telegram group. It's really incredible. So that's one thing I want to delve into. Then also some of the publications, like, I don't know where you find the time, eh? Like, I'm busy, but I think, Miguel, what a guy. He's publishing, he's teaching, he's operating, and he's taking the most amazing photographs.
Oh, I think, it's like everything in life. You have to choose the right time to do the right things, and you have to follow your instincts. And I think the most important thing is to be focused. If you are focused, it's everything. And if you try to avoid all the trash, all the toxic things go. But of course, it's not easy. It's not easy to deal with the time. My day is 24 hours, of course, like yours.
Yeah.
And we lose things, we win things. And it's a life decision that we took all the days. It's not something like I planned or like the evidence-based group. I thought it would be a very small group.
Yeah.
Then it grows suddenly. And
So tell the listeners a little bit more about that group, eh?
Yes.
Like at the background, how did this start and what's it like now after being going for so many years?
It was in the COVID season, you know, we all were at home, okay? And suddenly we were absolutely flooded by many groups in Instagram, in WhatsApp, Telegram, whatever. And suddenly we realized that it was not easy to split the good information and the bad information. You know, too many promotional, self-promotional.
Absolutely.
Pre and post-ops, and we were floating, we were losing time. And, I'm a strong believer in evidence-based medicine since the beginning.
Yeah, and I mean, for the listeners who don't know, you've also got your PhD that you got in the last few years as well.
Yes. And I thought, why not make a specific group to talk only about papers? Well, at least it's the best that we have.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, but it's the best that we have.
Yeah.
I think we have to deal with the best that we have. We cannot spend time thinking in what we should have.
Absolutely.
This is what we have.
Absolutely.
And the best that we have might not be good, but it's the best.
Yeah.
And the idea is to discuss science based on papers, not in my feeling, not in my opinion, not in my pre and post-op. I don't want to spend. Imagine in 1,000 members group, if each one posts one pre and post op, okay, you have 1,000 pre and post op. Almost all are very similar.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean nothing.
Yeah.
So I think each time I'm posting something in a group, I'm occupying your time.
Yes.
And I think that we should, this is a learning process. We are all learning. I'm learning as well as you.
Yeah.
And I think that in the digital world, we are now in the season of have some respect for the other's time.
Yes.
Because each time we are doing something, we are occupying your time.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even I don't want to do that, but I do that.
Yeah.
So all the rules, they are moving. And now I think that the digital world, it's a kind of a second life that we have.
Yeah.
It's in the season, the right season to talk about ethics. What should we do? What should we do to respect the other's time? Or,
but that's interesting, because then I look at some of these guys who have, like, I don't know, 200,000, 300,000, 500,000 Instagram followers. How the ethics involved there? It's like, I don't know. I've got to get my head around this whole social media thing sometimes.
I think it's absolutely. I'm not talking about that specifically. I'm talking about groups, you know? Yes. Because your Instagram, my Instagram, whatever Instagram, I think it's absolutely impossible, and it's even not fair to criticize. Well, there are, you know, some colleagues that they post things that I disagree absolutely, but they are on their own
it's
right.
A public thing. Yeah.
It's okay. Absolutely okay. There's no Batman, no Spider-Man to control that.
Yes.
And I don't lose one single second with discussing that. You know, it's okay. You do what you want. If you want to post whatever, it's okay. It's up to you.
Yeah.
I don't care.
But within a closed group, it's a different.
In a closed group, it's different because you are in a group.
Yeah.
You are not on your own. Okay. When you are on your own, it's okay. I have one idea about you. It's very bad. No, it's
no, but the evidence-based research group, I'm scared to post things on that group because it's so scientific, and it's like the big dogs are all on that group.
Yes. Oh. You know, that. I think there are two kind of members there. The vast majority, they would like to say something, but they are afraid. Yeah. Because they feel like they are in a court. It's not a court. You can post everything you want. Just post free paper, you know, hashtag free paper, and post the paper and post your opinion about that. And even if no one comments, they will read it. I think, I don't know, maybe 20, 30%. It means almost 400, they read it.
Wow.
Not specifically the paper, but your comment and the abstract. Yeah. They will read it. Because they came to me privately.
Okay.
And they say to me, well, I'm not used, I'm not so, I feel ashamed because you are a huge group and you can, even the big names.
Really?
Yes.
It's so interesting.
Yes, why not? It's okay. Sometimes you don't have to comment.
Yeah.
It's a very good paper or it's okay. Your comment will add anything. It's okay, feel free to go in.
So let's chat about something else. We've been working on a paper as well, which we hope to be published imminently. But you've been working on a whole lot of different papers. And the one that really stands out to me, maybe you can tell the listeners a bit more about it, is your septal flap.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Where does that come from? And explain that a little bit more for you.
Yes, I think I thought, what kind of septum would we like to have when we are operating? We would like to have a big septum, a strong septum, and with a high anterior septal angle.
Yes.
This is the ideal septum to operate. So can we do something to move anatomy to where we want the anatomy to be?
Okay.
And I thought, why not? Well, there are many options, many good options, of course. And I thought in between a septal extension graft and a columellar struct, these are the two big worlds.
Yes.
Can we do something in between? And I think the septal advancement flap is something in between. So we are doing an advancement of the caudal aspect of the septum, but we have a total control of the contour between the W point, the caudal aspect of the upper laterals, okay, and the nasolabial angle. You can control all that contour. It's not only for support. It's, I would say, mostly for contour. I'm a kind of obsessive with the supertip. Mostly when we start to do preservation, we are going to start to have supertip problems, depressions. So I can control that with the septum itself. And I can reinforce with everything. I can put two grafts, three grafts. Okay, most of the times I put two grafts, one in each side. First, I describe with one graft in the flap. You just take the most caudal part, then you flip, then you suture just to give strongness, of course.
Okay.
It must be strong, but you can add the structure that you want.
Yes.
Yes. Most of the colleagues, they are intrigued about the strongness of this flap, and it's not strong enough. even mostly in the anterior septal angle, because it might tilt. You can reinforce it, but you have still a continuity.
Okay.
So that's it, and then you can fix it to the nasal spine or in front of the nasal spine, like a floating in that tissues. And well, certainly I thought on that, why not? And I started to do it. It's now 10 months, so we will have the first 1 year outcome. It's not enough, of course, we have to wait, but I'm a strong believer. Then we have we work together with the Faculty of Engineering.
Yeah, no, they like it. I don't know if it's your brother who works there, because you're always working with the Faculty of Engineering, and it's so interesting.
No, it's really interesting. Yeah. Yes, I think we have lots to learn with orthopedic surgeons. They work a lot with engineering. Mm. And I think we are not an island. Okay, rhinoplasty is not an island. We have many common problems that we have with other surgeons, other surgeons. And why should we try to invent something if they did it first? You know, the knee surgeons, they know lots and lots about cartilage. So we should exchange knowledge.
Yeah.
And I talk a lot with them, with engineers, and I think we can learn a lot and we can improve a lot our skills and the outcomes. That's what we want.
Tell me, I've heard it said that you shouldn't do preservation until you know how to do structural rhinoplasty. What do you think about that comment?
Yes, sure. And it's not philosophical. I think preservation is nowadays is settling. In the air. It's not anymore, in my opinion, something like a boom. Nowadays, we are living in the era that we have some outcomes with 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. Mm. And we know that things, of course, they're not perfect. And of course, my opinion, and even all my residents, they work with me, they have a very big BS or bias, because I do always preservation in primaries.
Yes.
So, and I always tell them, you have to go to somewhere to learn structure, because it's the beginning of everything.
Yeah.
In my opinion, you have to structure, to know how to structure, of course.
So how has your technical side of rhinoplasty changed over the last few years? Because you're always innovating and you're always wanting to make some changes. But if you look back at dial back maybe 5 years ago and you were with the Sheila Ferreira technique, etc., have things changed apart from the septal advancement flap or some other things that you think you could have done better or you are doing better now?
We are improving the stability of the spare roof B because we are having some issues, you know, like the way we do the subdorsal osteotomy or ostectomy. We are improving it. Again, with the Faculty of Engineering, we study a lot because sometimes we cannot achieve really green stick fracture. I mean, nowadays, I achieve it in 95% of the cases. It's not easy. It seems easy, but it's not easy to achieve a green stick fracture. No. And I would say that in the beginning, you will have near 100% of real fracture that we don't want. So that's it. We are doing some refinements on the technique. With this septal advancement flap, it changes a little bit. It's not exactly a high strip. Okay, it's a kind of in between a middle and a high strip. And so we are improving, and our consistency is being very, very good because the outcomes of we still use the probes, the Utrecht questionnaire, and our consistency is very good. I'm very happy with the results. And I always do in all my primaries, I always do the spare roof B or the A if it is really a S-shaped little bones. We are wondering to do something new about the upper lateral cartilages soon. I will tell you.
Awesome.
Yes.
Okay, so, Miguel, last question. As we kind of bring this season to an end, is if people, and I mean, you teach a lot around the world, but if people want to come and visit you in Porto and come and learn from you, is there that possibility?
Yes, of course. Well, I don't have a program. Specifically, I don't have a program. I work in three different settings, you know, one public and two private. Yeah. I can manage the private, it's okay. The public, it's a fixed day, and typically on Thursdays. And, well, I don't have a specific program. Typically, they text me, and I say, this week I will be in Porto, so you can join me, and maximum 2-3 fellows or more than that. And, well, that's it. I'm not so organized in receiving people, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes I feel a little bit proud because I would say 50-50, 50% they are seniors.
And
I feel really proud because of that.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, people that they are surgeons like us and they
are
very experienced. Yes. Yes. And discuss. And I learned a lot with that kind of, you know, very high graduated fellows. They are not fellows. Yeah. And that's really very good for me.
Awesome, man.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
So, guys, that kind of brings us to the end of the season. And there are two thank yous that I have. Actually, there are three thank yous. The first one is to my technical team with what they put this thing together. Guys, thank you. Guys from Perfect Circle. The second thank you is to each of the speakers who take their time to sit here and listen to my questions. We've had like 30 interviews this season. It's amazing. And then I think the last final thank you is to say thank you to you guys who listen. If it wasn't for people wanting to listen to the stuff, we wouldn't do it. So, guys, thank you very much. Tell your friends to listen to the Rhinoplasty podcast. And gear up for next year when we do season 4, and I think it's going to be called Digging for Gold. We want to get some nuggets out of the practices. So that's it. My season 3 has come to an end, and thank you so much, Miguel. Thank you for bringing it to a close for us, eh? Great. For those of you who are only listening to this on a podcast platform, please try and reach out and get onto YouTube, because on our YouTube channel, we've got some really cool clips where I interview the guests.